Manamana.
We live in a world that's filled with entertainment and stories. It's books and movies and television and video games, podcasts. There is an endless choice out there. But sometimes, even as an adult, it's good to read a story of an ordinary person who changed the world. That's the name of the series of books written by Brad Meltzer and illustrated by Christopher Eliopoulos. Two new books are out in the series. I am Marie Curie, I always want to call her Madam, and I am Walt Disney, and I'm glad to have Brad Meltzer back with us on KAXE KBXE. Thanks for being here, Brad.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be back.
Well, I want to dive right into Marie Curie. I was so struck immediately in this book by your words about her childhood. I just want to read a little bit that right away when you wrote, they didn't want Polish kids to learn about science. They thought education would be dangerous, that it would make us powerful. They were right. That blew me away. Who would think?
By the way, that's my favorite line from that book. Listen, we've spoken about this before. I started these books because my kids were turning on the TV and seeing politicians, and what I wanted to show my kids were leaders. They put on the internet and on Instagram, they could see someone who's famous, but I want them to see people of character. And that's why these books were written, is to give my kids those lessons in character and kindness and compassion. But Marie Curie was a lesson that was going to be about power. And, I started with I Am Amelia Earhart and I Am Abraham Lincoln. We did I Am Rosa Parks and Albert Einstein. But I wanted my daughter to have a female scientist. And so here comes Marie Curie with a lesson about the power of discovery. And it's that moral lesson that's at the core of the story. So I love that line of, they thought it would make her powerful, and they were right. Because it just charges me up.
Yeah. Who would think, though, that now, 2019, how much relevance that those lines would have right now?
Just look where we are. And we all know our culture right now is starving for heroes, right? We turn on, and listen, I saw it starting in the 2016 election. I don't know if I ever told you this, but, we've been doing these books, and we did Jackie Robinson, and we did Lucille Ball, because I wanted my daughter to have a female entertainment hero who wasn't just famous for being thin and pretty, that Lucy stood for the idea it's okay to be different. We did I Am Helen Keller, because I want to, we put real Braille into the books. You can close your eyes and say, here's how I see the world, and feel the Braille and say, what's your name? My name's Helen. And kids could feel the real Braille alphabet. But when the 2016 election approached, something amazing happened with these books. And as Hillary and Donald Trump were beating each other's heads open every day, two of our books started selling more than any others. And they were I Am Martin Luther King Jr. and I Am George Washington. And it was because parents and grandparents were tired, as I said, of putting on the TV and seeing those politicians when what they wanted to show their kids were leaders. And, whatever side anyone's politics were, they were fighting back with these books, trying to find those lessons, not of fame, but of people that were actually good people. And again, look where we are right now. We need these stories. We need good heroes for our kids more than ever. And that's why I'm Marie Curie, a powerful woman, was such a vital part of this series.
How did she get her education when it wasn't accepted, for boys or girls to study science, and especially for girls to go on as far as she did?
And that's one of the best parts. So her father was her secret weapon, who kind of unlocked the fact she liked math and she was good at science. But when she decided, she was actually really young, and she decided, I'm going to change the world. I want to be a scientist. But the problem was, as you said, there were no colleges or universities that would teach girls back then. So she found a place called the Flying University. It, of course, didn't fly. But what it did do was it secretly taught science to women. And it was there that this girl, Marie Curie, gets this amazing new lesson in the elements, in the periodic table, in atoms, and how the universe works. And she is unlocked. She goes from there. She wins the first female to ever win a Nobel Prize. She's then the first person, male or woman, to win two Nobel Prizes in two different subjects. The first Nobel Prize, the Nobel Prize Committee didn't even want her speaking, even though she won it, because they didn't want women to speak. But one of my favorite details in the book is that scene where you see Marie Curie mixing chemicals together and it kind of, poof, blows up in her face. She says, let me try this way. Poof, it blows up again. Let me try this way. Poof, again and again and again. And for me, the lesson is plainly clear for my own kids. I mean, these are illustrated biographies. But what the lesson is that you don't have the great success. You don't discover anything. You don't have everything that Marie Curie has without having failure after failure after failure and pushing through it. And I love that that lesson stands at the core, because that's what Marie Curie always stands for, is this entire culture that says women can't do this. Women can't be scientists. Women can't go to college. Women can't do any of this. And Marie Curie pushes through it all and says, I have a different idea of how we're going to do things.
You know, when you say, you talk about failure, that's been something that's come up a lot lately for me in different, I was just at a conference and talking about, you know, that sort of fear, you stay in the same place you're at. And I think especially in this world when you can make your Facebook profile look so perfect and everything can always appear perfect, that we don't think about this as much anymore, that to get somewhere, you got to fail a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, Facebook culture, biggest lie around, right, is like everything's great and everything's golden and my kids are wonderful and I have no problems and let me post to everyone at this wonderful meal I'm eating in this place I'm going and none of you are having this experience that I'm having. But to me, that's not only not the truth, but it gives our kids the wrong lesson. There's a great Harvard study that just came out that talked about when we were younger, that what we focused on teaching kids and what we were taught is, you know, one of the great things to be was to be smart. Our parents wanted us to be smart. That was the commodity. Today, the commodity, because of Facebook and because of Instagram and because of all the likes that everyone has, the commodity we're teaching our kids, whether we like it or not, is that it's more important to be popular. That's what getting lots of likes does. That's what we do when we feed that culture. And it's very important to me that we take that culture and rewire our kids and show them that what we really value are in, whether it's intelligence, whether it's persistence, whether it's kindness, whether it's compassion. And that's what we do with all the I Am books. I mean, every book, people think that they're books about, you know, famous historical figures, but they're not about history. They're about values. They're about characters. It's why on the back of every single book is a moral lesson. On the back of I Am Amelia Earhart, it says, I know no bounds. On the back of I Am Abraham Lincoln, it says, I will speak my mind and speak for others. On the back of I Am Walt Disney, it talks about, you know, the magic being within you. And on the back of I Am Marie Curie, it talks about the power of discovery. And she understands the power of discovery. And I think if we don't try to rewire our kids, you know, our kids are going to pick heroes, whether we like it or not. You might as well have some say in it. And I love that there are so many people who use our I Am books to build libraries of real heroes for their kids, for their grandkids, for their nieces, and for their nephews.
And you are forgetting something very important. They are entertaining as heck to read as well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And listen, I love the fact that off the air you were talking about how you buy the books even though you don't have kids. And I need these books for myself when I need to get charged up. I mean, and what we do with our heroes today is, you know, they're built in granite. We dip them in concrete. We build great statues of them, and we do them a huge disservice because we put them on pedestals as if they're not human. But anyone you look up to, whether it's Dr. King or Rosa Parks, Marie Curie, Walt Disney, anyone else that we've done, Abraham Lincoln or Amelia Earhart, they had moments where they were scared and they were terrified, where they didn't think they'd be able to go on, and they pushed forward. And we need to remind our kids, you know, there's a reason if you look at the books, all the heroes are drawn as little kids. So in I Am Marie Curie, she's drawn as a little kid the whole time, even when she's winning the Nobel Prize. And I Am Walt Disney, he's drawn as a little boy the entire time, even when he creates the Magic Kingdom. The reason we do that is very, very clear, is we want kids to realize that these people were just like them. These aren't the stories of famous people. This is what we're all capable of on our very best days.
We're talking with Brad Meltzer about his series of books, Ordinary People Can Change the World. There are two new books that are coming out. We've been talking about I Am Marie Curie, and the other one is I Am Walt Disney. Let's talk about Walt Disney. I think sometimes because his name is so commonplace as like a brand, we forget he was a little boy, that he was a man that created all this. Why did you choose him?
Walt Disney, to me, is kind of the great American success story. Everyone knows Disney World and Disneyland. They're the perfect places on earth, the happiest places on earth, right? But what you realize when you look at his life is how hard that struggle was to get there. When he was a little kid, his dad didn't even promote or like his drawings, right? It was his aunt who said, hey, you know what? Here's a book. Why don't you draw on this and keep doing that drawing thing you love so much? And when he does his, one of his first great works of art is on the side of their house. He actually paints a picture on the side of the house, and he says, oh, don't worry, it's going to come off. But it won't, because he painted with tar. It never comes off. He totally messes up. And professionally, when he starts his first film company, it's a total, utter failure. They tell him he's going to have to declare bankruptcy. He's 21 years old. He has no more money. Sleeping in his office. He's taking a bath once a week in the train station. And I need my kids to know that you don't get all the happiness. You don't get all the success in the Magic Kingdom until you have, again, failure and failure and failure, but you drive forward. And it was the same even when he invented Mickey Mouse. I mean, when he tried to come up with this magical mouse, he went to his wife and said, I have an idea for a new mouse that's going to be in our cartoons. I'm going to call him Mortimer Mouse. And she's like, Mortimer, that's a terrible name. And that was her real reaction. He called it a terrible name. And then she says, why don't you name him Mickey? And he's like, I like that. And that's how the world got Mickey Mouse, not because it was easy and simple. The first Mickey Mouse cartoon wasn't even successful. But he, again, refused to accept failure and just pushed forward. And that's what magic is, right? Magic is doing what looks like it's impossible to everyone else, but actually is as simple as can be. That's the great trick. And that magic that he unlocks is within each of us. You just have to find your kind of happy place and that thing you love to do. And I need my kids to learn that too.
You told us how, you know, in the books, the kids are, the subjects are kids the whole way through. And you write it in their voice. How do you create their words?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Every voice is oddly different. I always obviously read their biographies. I read their statements. I read their quotes. And the Walt Disney Company was actually really great at giving us inside Walt Disney stuff. They let us use the archives, and the archivists there were so helpful for us in kind of correcting and getting voice right. Some of them are much harder. When I did I Am Martin Luther King Jr., I was like, I can't write like him. I can't possibly write like him. But we worked at it and worked at it and just kept using his speeches to try and pull out and figure out his own kind of cadence and intonation so it had a real voice. And it was, you know, we have the books always proofed by someone who was clearly better situated to do it. We had Congressman John Lewis read I Am Martin Luther King Jr. and proof it for us. Mm-hmm. And, he, you know, it was him telling me, okay, you know, he was right there with them, arm in arm, that I finally feel comfortable saying, okay, maybe we're trying, you know, and trying to do it a little better. But it's a huge responsibility, and it's really intimidating. But when you say I am Walt Disney, when you say I am Marie Curie, a child is listening. It's not just some dead black and white person in a history book. But when you say, I am, they're alive again. And they're bold and they're daring and they're fun for kids. And it's why people have reacted. And I think, listen, the art helps in is our secret weapon. Chris Eliopoulos, our amazing artist, has an art style that's like, I would say, Charlie Brown meets Calvin and Hobbes. I want my kids off their screens. I want my kids off their phones. But the only way that's going to happen is if you show them something better. And the art in the I Am series, in the Ordinary People Change the World series, is that thing that's better. Every kid that looks at it goes, oh, that's adorable. I want that. They see that little Walt Disney as a seven-year-old with a little mustache and slick back hair, and they're like, oh, I love that. And that's why I think kids have reacted to these books so well.
You write about in I Am Walt Disney about why he built Disneyland and then Disney World. I didn't know that story. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so he used to take his daughters to a local park where he lived in California to a merry-go-round. And they are on the merry-go-round, but he'd look around and be like, this is boring for adults. There's nothing for the whole family to do together here. So he started studying. Right? He doesn't think he knows all the answers. He starts studying amusement parks, historical sites. He looks at Gettysburg and places that people love to go. And he realizes that he needs to create a new world. And he says, we're going to have this world, and it's going to be things from tomorrow, things from the past, things from like a fairy tale land, and a fantasy where we're going to have. And they're like, well, what about stuff from today? And he's like, nope, nothing from today. There's going to be Tomorrowland. There's going to be, you know, stuff from yesterday. There's going to be Fantasyland, but nothing from today. And he opens this place called Disneyland. He's the first one to try all the rides. He rides them first. And I love that Walt Disney, again, just looks around and sees what he wants for his own family. And when you really look at his life, he grew up in a town in Missouri that was like this, you know, kind of old-fashioned town where neighbor helped neighbor. There was a train running in the middle of the town. And when they're building Disneyland, they're like, is he building Disneyland or is he building his old hometown? If you look at them, they're close. And that's what Walt is doing. He's finding his happy place, rebuilding his happy place when he was little and his life was so much easier and everything was calmer. And that's why I think it has that effect on us when we go there, is because we're feeling what was brought so much love and calm to him. And I think all of us realize, and we need to remember, we're not, you know, we're very special, but we're not that special. We're not that different. And those things that we love and share, time to kind of spend more time finding those than the things that just divide us and make us hate each other.
You have said that you write these books for your kids. Disney World is also something for your kids. Tell us about bringing them there, how you do that for them.
Oh, this is my favorite. Yeah, so this was a very personal book for me because once a year we do a surprise in my family. We're on the way to school in carpool. Rather than going to school, I actually drive past the school and instead drive straight to Disney World and surprise my kids because I live in Florida. And my kids lose their minds. And the reason I do it is because I want to teach my kids that every day you can find some magic in it. And even on the days we don't go, my kids will be, especially when they were younger, where every day was so exciting. Dad, we're going to Disney World today. Every day is school. We're going to Disney World. We're going to Disney World. It just made it a lot of fun. So obviously Disney World plays a huge part in my family. My kids know it from when they're little. And now I have one, you know, they're grown. Some are in high school and some are in junior high school. But it's still become a great tradition for us. And I want them to know that person behind that. When I was a little kid, people like Jim Henson on Sesame Street and people like Walt Disney taught me that you could use your creativity to put good into this world. And all I'm trying to do today is hopefully with these books, use my creativity to put some good into this world.
Well, maybe you could put out like 20 more before election 2020. That would be nice.
We need them, right? I mean,
yes.
The funny part was is when I first did this series, the publisher said to me, oh, great, you're going to do I Am Abraham Lincoln and I Am Amelia Earhart. That's great. Well, two books. And I said, no, I don't want to do two books. And they said, what are you talking about? I said, I want to do 100 books. And I said, I want to build a library. I want people to have a library of good that they can point to, a library of kindness and compassion that they can point to. And this is book 18 and 19 in the series, because we've done Jane Goodall and we've done George Washington and we've done Gandhi and Sacagawea, Sonia Sotomayor, because we want to do our first Latina hero. And, you know, we did one of the biggest sellers. It was amazing. You tell me what this says about the culture. We did I Am Neil Armstrong. And Neil Armstrong used to never use the word I. He used to always use the word we. We did this. We accomplished it. And he wasn't talking about his fellow astronauts. He was talking about the scientists, the mathematicians, the people who sewed his spacesuit together. Remember when humility was a great American value? We've lost it. Our leaders have lost it. All we do now is focus on those who are the loudest, those on social media who speak in all capital letters and multiple exclamation points and say, look at me. And people use I am Neil Armstrong to fight back against that and remind their kids that it's the humble ones, it's the quiet ones who do hard work that are the ones we should actually look up to.
The two new books are out in the series, I Am Marie Curie and I Am Walt Disney. You can find more information at Ordinary People Change the World, written by Brad Meltzer and illustrated by Christopher Eliopoulos. Brad, I can't wait to talk to you about the next ones you do. Thanks so much for your time.
Can't wait. Thanks so much.